This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Tuesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
It helps as I turn on my mic.
Well, you know, those little things. Come on.
And I can't blame that on the gremlins. That's my fat finger hitting it. It's like, oh my gosh. Well, it is Tuesday, and that means it is Real Estate Insights with Amy McLeod and Elizabeth Smith joining us today. Amy is with the McLeod Group, Keller Williams, and Elizabeth is with the Smith Mortgage Group, Success Mortgage. Ladies, welcome to you both. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Did I get all that in? It was like, gotta get it all in.
You did great.
So again, it is that time. We're going to, you know, we've been focusing, the broad focus so much is outside national politics. We've been kind of narrowing it down. And now we're going to focus on real estate and what's happening in the markets in Oregon, specifically the Willamette Valley. And so, Elizabeth, let's go ahead and start with you from a mortgage perspective. Number one, any trends and things like that? What's the rate at right now? Five something?
We've fallen into the fives, and that's been a welcome number considering 2 years ago, I think we were hitting eights. So,
eight. Mm-hmm.
Didn't think I'd see that, but yes, we did actually have some eights in there for a minute. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the rates have been trending down slowly, obviously, as inflation and weaker job numbers come out. You'll see a tendency for the market to move on. Those two are the big move makers on the mortgage industry.
Okay. So now what about this? There's a $200 billion. Of course, Trump is kind of weighing in on a lot of these things. $200 billion Fannie Mae mortgage-backed securities directed from President Trump. Okay, I'm reading that. I'm going, what the heck does that mean? What is that?
Oh, man, that was such a, like, I'm going to try really hard not to get on my soapbox on this one because there's there's a lot to unpack with that. And I think that people need to kind of understand. One of the big things I saw immediately on social media was, oh, my gosh, we're going to have to pay that back. We're going to have taxes and they're going to increase this and that. And one of the things people need to understand is that money is sitting in Fannie and Freddie's, that's sitting there, and actually doesn't actually stay with Fannie and Freddie. It filters off into the Treasury. And this has been happening since 2010. And a lot of people don't understand, but even 10 years ago, the interest rates were they were lower because we didn't have these things called LLPAs. Loan level pricing adjustments. This has been a hidden fee that has been added into your mortgage over the last 10 years. And it started off slowly. Do you remember a couple years ago, there was a big thing about people being upset that their credit score, the higher credit score, was now going to pay a higher fee or a higher rate?
Yeah.
You remember that when it hit the news?
Yeah.
That is what they call an LLPA, loan level pricing adjustment. And it's this big grid. And we look at this grid, and depending on your loan to value and depending on your credit score, we pay Fannie and Freddie a fee for that. So for example, right now, if you had a 780 credit score with an 80% loan to value, that sounds really good, right? That sounds like the kind of loan people want.
20% down, right?
Yeah, 20% down. Mm-hmm. There is still a 0.375 fee on that. It builds into your rate, so you're not actually writing a check for it. But if you were to take that and do the math on it, that's like $1,125 for like a $300,000 mortgage that Fannie and Freddie are just taking right off the top. And that money goes to Fannie and Freddie, which then filters over into the Treasury. And the reason that happened is because after the 2008 crash, they bailed them out. And they had given them $200 billion, and they actually have received that money back and then some. And they have never transferred it out of that conservatorship. So it is this massive money-making thing that they have added in these fees. So there's no tax. So realistically, that is money taxpayers have paid. Anytime you got a mortgage, you've paid that fee.
Uh-huh.
So it's time for it to come back into the industry.
Hey, Elizabeth, tell me if I'm wrong, though.
Yep.
If you're like an FHA loan with lower down, you don't pay that fee.
Oh, you still have LLPA. They're on everything. They're on VA. They're on USDA. They're on everything.
Huh.
But that money goes to a different group. We're talking specifically Fannie Freddie.
Gotcha.
But they're built into the rates. So one of the things that people have been saying in the mortgage industry is, if you want to lower the rates, cut the LLPAs, because they've gone up so much. Where it was, 10 years ago for a second home, you're getting the same kind of pricing as a primary residence. Now a second home or an investment property with 20% down, there's 4 points built into that rate. That's why you see such a difference between the two. And we
and
look
that's
at
a
other.
Payment of 4% based on the loan
Whoa.
Amount.
Right. 4 points in fees on the back.
Fees, 4%.
So what we do is when we're looking at those numbers, let's say if the raw pricing today is 6%, I have to figure out enough credits on the backside to cover that 4 points. I'm not charging it to you. So you're probably paying 7%. So do you see how that could affect the
yes.
overall mortgage rates?
A lot of people don't know that lenders can raise the rate
yeah.
to reduce the fees. So
yeah.
so when you call for that investment property and it's about a point higher than a purchase, this is why.
Yeah. And when you start to look wow. back in the volume of refinances, so they started putting in these little fees for refis and things in 2020. And in 2020, the mortgage industry did, Fannie and Freddie did $4 trillion. In 2021, they did $4.4 trillion. Last year, they did $1.82 trillion. It just, yeah, that's because we had that refi boom with the rates really, really low.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
Think about how much money was made during that time. So, It's realistically 200 is that going to move the markets considerably? It could move it some, but it's not going to drop you into the twos and threes. We may get down in the mid fives because it's one lever. You still have all the other levers, the inflation, the jobs reports, all those things still play in. But from an overall perspective of that's our money we've all paid.
Right.
So to me, I'm like, yeah, you should invest it back in. But I think the overall good news is that the administration, and you're starting to see a lot more about affordable housing. So, you know, my hope is they start to review these fees that they have increased dramatically in the last 10 years. Like, I can't even do the math. I was trying to figure it out this morning, but it is a lot of money that homeowners have been paying that have just basically been siphoned off the top and gone right into the treasury to be spent as the government sees fit.
With most of them having no clue that this is happening.
No, you have no clue. I mean, we do because all of a sudden, why did that cost more? Why is the rate gone up? Because, well, there's costs to be covered.
And go ahead. A quarter point changes a payment on an average house around here about how much?
You know, it depends on where we're talking, a quarter point in fee or in interest rate.
Quarter point in interest rate, because that's what the consumer sees.
Yeah, you're probably $50.
$50 for a quarter point. But if it's a full point, you're talking $200.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, affordability boils down to payment for the consumer. Mm-hmm. And so
right,
here
right.
we've got our 2010 federal government siphoning off money one way or the other. And they've been paid back for what they...
Multiple times paid back so for what they put in there. So our thing is, hey, let's get the money back to where we don't have these fees, and that would automatically lower rates right away because you don't have to pay that fee. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, I'm hoping that kind of comes up. I know the Mortgage Bankers Association. Luckily, I have the opportunity, the company that I work for, the president of the MBA the chair-elect is the CEO of our company. So I get to hear a lot of this data up front, personal, and ask questions. And it's always very interesting to see, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff. So, yeah, you know what I think the biggest newsmaker on that is? They're looking mm-hmm. at it. At least they're okay. looking at it.
And they haven't been for 15 years. Did it just sort of quietly creep in and go, just put it in here and
yeah, it did quietly creep in. It was just kind of additionally, oh, we're just going to all of a sudden add a quarter here for this, or we're just going to change this. And yeah, I remember getting news updates in my emails of the LLPAs moved a little bit. They were moving them around quite a bit for a while. They haven't moved them for a few years because they're kind of at the high end and they can't with the rates because then you're just pushing the rates back up.
Let me guess, was it supposed to be temporary?
Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you. Temporary. Market condition fee. That's what there for a while in 2020. It was an automatic half a point was added to every single refinance, and it was called a market condition fee. They did drop that one eventually, but it was extremely frustrating to just say, hey, you want to get this loan refinanced, but there's still an additional half point on all of this that the government's going to take.
And I think what's so interesting about it is the layering of the challenge to affordability is just so deep. And so, like, looking at our city councils or our mayors, even that just having land use issues at the state level, that's that's not enough. I mean, this is just like pervasive things that are impacting the cost of housing.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of little, literally death by a thousand cuts. I mean, there's just little things there. Temporary, just temporary. Kind of like the income tax, right? It's only going to be this much back in 1913. I don't know. I don't trust that word. All right, let's go ahead and take our first break. We'll come back and we'll talk about now. Should I put this to like the clash? Should I buy or should I rent now? It's my little clash homage. We're going to talk about that, especially tying into what we're talking about with all of these changes. And some money being, some different things, interesting things happening. So again, it's Real Estate Insights with Amy McLeod and Elizabeth Smith on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill in Bi-Mart, where it's Lucky Number Tuesday.
It is the, and we all know what we're supposed to do today. What are we supposed to buy, Hunter?
Ammo.
Ammo.
Right. Gotta whisper it. We can't talk out loud.
No, we can't. That's gotta be whispered.
Allegedly.
Be whispered. All right. Allegedly. Right. We have to throw in allegedly. Okay. Well, again, I won't sing again, but I mean, as soon as I see that line, I think of The Clash, which I loved. But yeah, should I buy or should I rent now? Given some good stuff that's coming down the pike.
Yeah, and I'm hearing that every single week. Should I buy or should I keep renting and wait? And almost always that question comes with this follow-up because I'm waiting for the interest rates to come down. Okay, well, they've come down from 8. We're, under 6, so I don't know what you're waiting for. But today I want to talk about how to think through buying versus renting and why waiting for rent rates alone isn't always the smartest strategy. Most people make this decision by comparing monthly payments, and while that's important, it's not the whole picture. So you need to think about how long you plan to stay, your lifestyle, what you want your money to be doing for you. So if you think you may move in a year or two, renting might make sense. It gives you some flexibility and fewer responsibilities, but if you plan to stay in one place for 5 years or longer, buying starts to look very different because instead of paying a landlord, you're building equity over time. You know, we've said before, you're already paying a mortgage. It's just somebody else's.
Not yours, yeah.
So another thing that people often overlook at is control. And rent usually goes up, sometimes significantly. Here in Oregon, it's 7% plus the CPI up to 3%, so a max of 10%. And I think the last CPI I saw was like 2.4. So 9.4. Yeah. A smart landlord would be raising it 9.4 every year.
Is that annually?
Annually.
Okay, that is every year.
Yeah. Yep. And it gives you, so that's important. So yes, you'll have maintenance and repairs, but part of your monthly payment is going back to you in the form of equity. And then as our market, the real estate market over the long curve has always increased. So let's now talk about the idea of waiting for interest rates to fall. On the surface, that sounds logical. Lower rates equal lower payment, right? But here's the part people don't always think through. When interest rates drop, more buyers jump back into the market at the same time. And that increased demand almost always leads to higher prices and more competition. And this, you know, waiting right now, we've had the equivalent of about 3 years. Mm-hmm. In March, it'll be exactly 3 years of buyers sitting on the sidelines. So what often happens is that rates come down a bit, but home prices go up, multiple offers return. I was just in a multiple offer situation yesterday on a 475 house. Mm-hmm. And buyers end up paying more for the house itself, and then you're locked in. So in some cases, they're also waiving inspections or other protections just to compete. So I see this play out all the time that buyers wait on the sidelines thinking they're being cautious. They want to look good and be right. And then when rates dip, they find themselves in bidding wars they never expected. Mm-hmm. And the irony is that many of those buyers could have purchased earlier with less competition and then refinance later if rates come down. And, you know, many lenders will allow you to, within a year, refinance without lender costs. You still have to pay title and escrow. So the important point is you can refinance a rate, but you can't renegotiate the price. And instead of asking, should I wait for interest rates to fall, a better question is, does buying make sense for my life right now? And can I comfortably afford it? And frankly, with this money out there and all the hype, you know, there's a lot of programs that Elizabeth can speak to. We've talked about this before. A 2-1 buy down, a 3-1 yeah. buy down. And if you jump into the market right now, where sellers, you know, are still, they're still smarting, you may be able to get a seller to help you, to help you with that buy down. So
what are the sellers? The sellers are still smarting from the, just the higher interest rates.
Well, they've gone through the whole winter and a lot right. of them have sat there.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that, I think, last time. I mean, the runway is long now. And now I know we talk about the unicorn years, 21, 22, where it was like blink and it's gone. And, right. you know, 50 grand or 100 grand over asking and all the stuff. Sounds like if they're waiving inspections again, are we a little bit back in that? Maybe not for the same reasons. But.
In some price points, we yeah. are. And, you know, like we've talked about, the spike price is from 350 to 500. That's our yeah. highest demand. So if you're down in the 400, oh, 375, you very consistently are, we're seeing multiple offers. Okay. So mm-hmm. I haven't seen a whole lot of waiving inspections. It's not that many multiple offers.
Okay. Okay.
But you can't. We had a gentleman that was looking up to 500 and he wanted to discount price and have closing costs. And what he was finding was that the sellers would discount the price or do closing costs, not both.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he waited. And then a couple days after this announcement, because everybody's on Facebook yapping about how mortgage rates are going to fly down, we went out to buy a house and he got no closing costs. And was in a competing situation. We ended up paying over asking. So you see, we have the example in 1 week. Mm-hmm. So waiting for those interest rates to come down dramatically could dramatically change the landscape.
Interesting. Elizabeth, you look like you have something you want to add to that.
I'm just thinking about the number of examples that's happened. Mm-hmm. And yeah. you know, I've been really encouraging people. If it's on your radar, like, talk to me now. I was really proud of a client the other day. I had talked with her 6 months ago and I did my follow-up call and I just said, how are things going? Because we want to plan it out. Like, it's a big purchase. You don't want to just suddenly do it. Sometimes that's what people do. And, mm-hmm. you know, but I encourage people, hey, that's a goal in 2026. Let's talk now. Let's like look at all your finances. Let's look at your income. Let's dial this all in and make sure that there's some opportunity here for you to tweak this or that. And by doing that, I've had several clients that actually take my advice. Then they come back around and they're in a much stronger spot. They're able to afford that extra $100, which is, you know, $20,000 more than what they had been looking at. Right. And that sometimes, and Amy can speak to that, puts you in a different type of house bracket. Maybe it's mm-hmm. that 325, now all of a sudden you're at 350. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a different level of house. And, you know, it's sometimes you really do, when you're making this large of a purchase, this large of a debt, and this large of an investment, it takes a little planning. So my encouragement is, if this is on your radar, let's talk now. Let's look at it now. It doesn't cost you anything to get a mortgage plan. Mm-hmm. And then that way, you know exactly what rate, you know exactly what that payment's going to look like, you know exactly what those taxes have to be in. And you then have that out of the way. Because it's like, oh, my neighbor's house just went up for sale. I need to get pre-qualified right now. And it's Friday afternoon. And there's all the stress and strain. And that's just, it's not fun. It's a hard way to start the process. So it's just, it's take the time, like Amy said. Because one announcement can shift the entire market yeah, and shift crazy. The entire mindset. People, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my gosh, we got to move now. And then, yeah, you're running into competition. But if you're already done and ready to go, you can write that offer a lot easier.
Well, and the funny thing is, most people start with the realtor, uh-huh. and good realtors like our team, we send them first to Elizabeth.
So quick question, just to backtrack, you get yeah. pre-qualified. It's kind of like, what's the expiration date on that?
It's 90 days. So
that's
the credit reports are good for 90 days. And then we just re-up your credit. Don't go buy a car. Don't go do, you know, anything with yeah. your credit, and then maintain your job. So we just get updated pay stubs and stuff. But no, we can have a file completely underwritten with an actual underwriter. And yeah. that's going to be a much stronger offer when Amy goes yeah. out and says, hey, this person has these two pieces. They have the credit. They have the capacity. Now we're just looking for the collateral, that third C. And I think that if I was selling my home, that's what I would want. I want people walking through my house that have actually can afford it. Otherwise,
yeah,
you know, why?
What's the point?
Why are you in my house? That's kind of weird.
But 90 days is, you know, if you're not ready to buy a house in 90 days, let's say it's 6 months or 9 months or a year, we still say go talk to Elizabeth.
Absolutely.
Because we can always update this stuff.
Right.
But it's sort of like planning to go to college. Go look at the colleges and then come back and sort out what and when.
Exactly. Yeah, and then you know what you're working with, too. It's not a surprise, especially if you think, you know, I've got a budget up here. And when you really look at the numbers, it's like, nah, kind of really, it's kind of down here. Because that's going to put you, like you said, in a different house market.
Right.
Absolutely.
And who wants to be disappointed thinking I'm going to be getting, you know, this beautiful home over here and I'm really over here in the manufactured home? Kind of want to know that.
Yeah. Or vice versa. It can be also
not to cast aspersions on manufactured homes. Many of them are beautiful. But you are in two different markets and you need to know that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
You just looked like you wanted to say, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour too. So I don't want to jump into a new conversation until we get over. Because then when we come back after the news, we're going to talk about you've got your home on the market and why isn't it selling? Because it is a bit of a different market. Mm. So different challenges. And, you've got to factor all that in. Yeah, well, it's going to be abroad because there's many, many reasons.
Yes.
For me, it would be smelling like a dog.
Oh, that's a biggie.
That's just me.
That's kind of a biggie. Kind of a biggie. So a lot of reasons, a lot of fantastical thinking these days.
I know. So we'll do a deep, we'll dig deeper into that when we come back from the break for the bottom of the hour news.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. We are talking real estate insights today with Amy McLeod, the McLeod Group, and Elizabeth Smith from the Smith Mortgage Group. Okay, so I'm ready to sell. I've got my house up. I've painted over all my weird, you know, color block, bright red walls. Everything's agreeable gray. I've got new floors. I've updated this. It's on the market. I'm so excited. I think everyone's going to love my house as much as I do. And then nothing.
Yeah.
Why?
Well,
what did I do wrong?
Well, and worse than that, you get no feedback and you go 6 months and you come off the market. So that's
totally dejected, depressed, eating too much.
Yep. So, you know, we talked about how the unicorn years attracted a lot of agents that didn't have to master the craft of counseling, coaching, and pricing properties. So if your home's on the market and it's not selling, one of the most frustrating things you can hear during that time period is nothing. Because when the house doesn't sell, then those agents oftentimes, honestly, they're just fearful for calling, to call and bring news that they know you don't want to hear. So I want people who have these houses in this situation or have recently come off to market to know that no showings or maybe a few showings, but no offers. And when you ask for feedback, you're told no one said anything or no one mentioned price or they just didn't give feedback. I want to talk about today what that really means and what it doesn't mean. So first of all, let's talk about feedback itself. Realtors generally hope for honest feedback. I know I do. I want to know what they said when they got in the car, even with the swear words. I want to know. So we ask for it. We follow up on it. We do it three times in our office, begging these realtors to give us feedback. We'd love to be able to come back to a seller and say, here's exactly why the buyer passed on your house. But the reality is that most buyers and even most buyers' agents are uncomfortable being negative. We just are. And they're human. They don't want to offend you. They don't want to argue. And in some cases, they don't want to open Pandora's box to confrontation or follow-up conversations. So silence is not neutral. Mm-hmm. Silence in this case is information. When a buyer walks through a home and doesn't write an offer, they made a decision, even if they didn't spell it out in words that you can hear or accept. Another important thing to understand is that buyers rarely say the house is overpriced. They'll never say that. What they say is, we're going to keep looking, or it didn't feel right, or it just wasn't the one. Price is implied in that, just not stated. And buyers compare homes constantly. We know that buyers start their search 18 months in advance. They're very educated about the market, and they know what else is available at the same price point.
Yeah.
And if your home doesn't rise to the top of that comparison, they simply move on. So we've talked about, you know, the intertwining of price and condition is the only thing that sells a house. So let's talk about showings. If a home is online, it's advertised literally everywhere, internationally. Yeah. You don't have to worry about that anymore. Mm-hmm. And if no one's coming through the door, that's not a mystery. That's a message. Mm-hmm. Today's buyers decide whether to tour a home almost entirely online. I know we do our first cut with our buyers online. Price, photos, condition, and presentation all factor into the decision. And if the buyers are skipping your house, it usually means one of three things. The price doesn't match condition, the presentation isn't competitive, or there are better options at the same price. So no one's going to email you and say that directly. So for sellers who are getting showings but no offers, that's actually very valuable information. That means buyers were interested enough to get up from their computer, get out of their pajamas, and come see your house. But something stopped them from taking the next step. And in most cases, that something comes down to value or that dog odor you mentioned. And it's just not just the price, value. It's value in relation to other homes they've seen. So here's the hardest part to hear. The market gives feedback whether people do or not. Time on market is feedback. Lack of offers is feedback. Silence is feedback. And none of that means that your house isn't wonderful. It just means it's not lining up with buyer expectations at your current price or condition. So there is emotion can get in the way. Sellers live in their homes. They know the memories, the upgrades, the care that went into it. A buyer doesn't see that. They see options and they choose the one that feels like the best deal for them. And I can't overemphasize how much HGTV impacts sellers and buyers. So the most successful sellers are the ones who stop waiting for someone to say, it's the price. And start asking, what is the market telling us? Because the market's always talking, just not always out loud. And if your home isn't selling, it doesn't mean you've failed. It means it's time to address strategy, price, condition, and probably find a realtor like the McLeod Group who's courageous enough to tell you the truth.
And that's the thing. Like you said, it is emotional. It is your home, especially if you've lived in it for any length of time and you do pick out those colors and that does mean something to you. And, you know, it's got the charm that you think everybody is going to see. I remember going to look at a place not that long ago and it was in the right price point. It had some land and I walked into it and the mustache, because I immediately, my face crinkled up in disgust. Just walking in the door and I'm like, bleh, no thanks. It was an instant reaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to do too much work to make this livable. It looks like crap. No. And it was like over before we even literally stepped over the threshold.
I watched Maine Cabin Masters last night build a new house. It was a modular. It was great. Interesting. Mm-hmm. The people wanted a black kitchen. And I'm not kidding you. It was all black.
Okay.
The kids' bedrooms, one was green, one was pink, one was orange. Their master bedroom was light blue with a lavender. The two bathrooms were lavender. Oof. Now, I can't tell you how many, and they loved it. They walked in and they loved it. The kids loved it. And I can't tell you how many people I've said, the inside of your house cannot look like an Easter basket filled with eggs. That was the best example I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm cringing. It. Yeah. I'm like, oh,
I know,
God.
Me too.
But as long as
the
they
light blue and the lavender got me the most, though.
The black kitchen. And the black.
Really? Because I don't know. I can maybe, if it was big enough, I could see that kind of working.
We're talking cabinets, walls, everything.
Gosh, I mean,
were they like goths or something?
Not exactly. No, he was the producer for the show. You know, they're just very artsy people. But, you know, that's fine. Enjoy your house. Yeah. But just recognize when you do those things, that's not going to be appealing when they sell that house.
I remember a listing in Salem maybe 5 years ago. And it was someone who was obviously a gifted artist, very creative. The whole house you walked in, it looked like, and I don't want to insult this person, but you know, remember Lisa Frank back in the day? It was like this explosion of colors, right, and shapes and images. And I can, you know, you look at it and I can see why that person loved to live there. I would have probably got a little, you know, vertigo being in there. Mm-hmm. But at that point, I think you're right. They put it on the market looking that way. I mean, you're looking at maybe like a teeny tiny percent of buyers that are going to go for that. And exactly. Good luck finding them. So that was where you would have to sort of really counsel that individual to say, I'm sorry, you're going to have to cover all that up with agreeable gray.
Yes. And it takes some talent to do that without insulting and breaking rapport with your client.
Yeah, that would be a tricky one.
Yeah, it really is. But these are the things. It's price, condition. That's it. Price and condition. So I always tell my clients, I've sold a house with a roof caving in.
Wow.
The price accommodated for it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was a gentleman here who lived actually in Kaiser, and they had one of the original beautiful 1950s, three bedrooms, one bath with all the beautiful paneling, la, la, la.
Oh.
And I was trying to explain to him, you're not getting the price you want because buyers want two bathrooms.
Well, I've always walked down the hall. It's no problem.
And I said, I know, but these first-time buyers living in apartments, they have two bathrooms. And the only way I could get him to relate was to say to him, your one bathroom in this house is tantamount to me asking you to buy a house with an outhouse. And then he got it. Because he was like 75 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
I would never put up with an outhouse. I want indoor plumbing.
And so I said, that's the same for buyers. So you have to update what buyers are looking for.
So he ended up adding another bathroom, I'm assuming.
No, because there's two.
But he dropped the price.
We dropped the price to accommodate for the inconvenience.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which, that's the easier way to do it then, yes, than adding another bathroom.
Well,
that illustrates the stubbornness in somebody because, well, what I'm used to, okay, great. Mm-hmm. But that's not what everybody else is used to. Again, with like the color explosion as well and a black kitchen. I'd still like to see that though. Now you got me curious.
I'll send you. That well, you'll have okay. to go see Maine Cabin Masters.
Maine Cabin Masters.
The cabin Builders. It's on, I can't say that, but.
Yeah.
So, what was it back in the day? You talk about HGTV and all that kind of stuff. Remember the whatever they bus driver move that bus and you'd get that house,
right?
And they'd make like the jungle room or the kid likes fire trucks, so he was like surrounded with fire trucks, and then all you know everything that you've got these weird quirky did that kind of become a thing for a while for people.
I don't know that a lot of people. I saw a lot of people doing that in Salem to that degree.
Yeah,
it costs money.
A lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there are some unique things like that that people, you just have to understand those houses. They, you know, because I might have had all girls and not wanted fire trucks.
Right.
So, you have to think about that.
Even that poor young man, as he grew up, you know, trying to go through puberty and fire trucks really aren't your thing anymore. There's a project.
There it is.
But it costs so much and everything else. And you're kind of, well, honey, you know, you're stuck with them. Whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Oh, my gosh. Good stuff. Okay. We're going to take our last break again. We're talking Real Estate Insights with Amy McLeod and Elizabeth Smart. Smith. We'll be right back.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
All righty, we are wrapping up our real estate insights today with Amy McLeod and Elizabeth Smith.
Who's very smart.
She's very smart. We need to listen to her. Both of these ladies are very, very smart. Okay, so we were kind of talking about, you know, what the buyers think, and you're going to put that out there. You got your black cabinets in your kitchen and your kaleidoscope walls. When you're actually putting your house on the market, really, what do today's buyers really care about? What do they want to see?
Yeah, that's a great question. And if you haven't bought or sold a house in the last few years, you might be surprised to learn that what buyers care about today is very different from what mattered even 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. A lot of sellers assume buyers are focused on the same things they were. Big square footage, you know, those big mini McMansions. Fancy upgrades or just getting the highest price possible. But today's buyers are looking at homes through a very different lens. And what I see is that buyers care far less about potential and much more about certainty. They want to know exactly what they're getting and what it's going to cost them before they even think about making an offer. So I often tell this story that my parents were taught, you go find the ugliest house in the neighborhood, you put your sweat equity, and that's how you build wealth.
Yep.
So, except that my mom didn't work. So she was doing the household errands during the week. Mm-hmm. Dad came home, had a beer on Friday night, and they went to work on projects on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
We also weren't being run around to 3, 4, 5 different sports every week. Mm-hmm. And so then my generation, the baby boomers, we both worked. And so we didn't have as much of the sports stuff, but we were trying to do weekend errands and projects, and our kids were watching it at about the same time that we had the, you know, HGTV come on the screen, where they saw everything gets done for you. So we have to keep that in mind. What I see is that one of the biggest shifts is the move-in ready factor. Years ago, buyers were willing to take on projects, mm-hmm. but today many are stretched financially and emotionally. They're dealing with higher interest rates, higher insurance costs, higher everyday expenses, and the idea of buying a home and immediately taking on renovation just feels overwhelming.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that fixer-uppers won't sell, but that's what gave lead to all the fixer-flippers, right? Those houses that you want to just sell as is, they have to be priced realistically, and buyers are very cautious about buying them unless they're in the industry. So another major change is how buyers think about space. Bigger isn't automatically better. And that's why we adjust, that's why Zillow is wrong, because it applies the average price per square foot to every square foot.
Uh-huh.
But the difference between a 2,500 square foot house and a 2,600 square foot house is not that much.
Yeah.
And so what layout matters to them, they're looking at, can I work from home? Is there space for guests or hobbies? Mm. Does the home function for my day-to-day life? I see buyers choosing a smaller home with better layout over larger homes that don't flow well. Not good for, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s floor plan where everything was chunked up.
Yeah.
So flexibility is huge right now. Monthly cost has also become a much bigger deal. So buyers are paying very close attention to insurance, taxes, HOA fees, and utilities. They want to know what it costs to live in these houses. And it's especially important because buyers are more payment conscious than ever for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But two homes in the same price can feel very different depending on insurance and tax rates. And buyers are doing the math. So another thing that's changed is tolerance for risk. Buyers today are much less willing to overlook red flags. They're cautious about homes with unclear maintenance history, older roofs, foundation issues. Get that stuff fixed ahead of time. And here's something sellers don't often expect. Buyers care a lot about how a home feels online. Most buyers decide whether they even want to see the home, like we talked about, based on photos and how it's presented. So for buyers, it means that you're not being picky, you're being practical, and you're making a long-term decision about the market that requires more thought than speed. But for sellers, it means understanding today's buyer and their mindset is critical. And homes that are priced right, well presented, and easy to understand sell faster and with less stress. And homes that ignore these shifts will sit longer than expected. So,
question then about that, because you're looking at first-time buyers again. I think the average age is what, 38 to 40 right now.
Right.
And then you're talking about flow in different things, but a lot of those buyers are more into the older home market, the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, that are more chunked up. So are those, is that presenting sort of a challenge that way if they're looking for that, but they can only afford that, or some of them, because to me, those older homes are charming. And I know a cohort of buyers, younger buyers, that find them charming as well. But they don't necessarily flow because you've got doors and you've got separate dining rooms and, you know.
Well, I'm not sure that I see that buyers prefer those older homes. I wouldn't categorize it like that. I think those older homes may be favorable because they typically were smaller.
Yeah.
Which means they're more affordable.
Right. What I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
They're also in our more affordable neighborhoods. And honestly, mm-hmm. a lot of them have like an open dining room, living room, mm-hmm. and you might go through a door to a kitchen. So it's not that great big open floor plan. But the living area, like having that dining room, a lot of them don't use the dining room as a dining room. It's, you know, where they do homeschooling or they have their office. But
their office.
It's open. Yeah, but I think what's driving what you're seeing has more to do with price because of size. It also, some of those older houses have spaces that can be converted for house hacking. So if you have a nice dry basement that can be turned into a, an additional dwelling unit that you can charge rent for. You know, these are some of the ways that young buyers could house hack. I know I would if I was looking at these interest rates and, you know, looking at 40% of my net income, 40 to 50% of my net income was going to a payment and it was just me and my husband, I'd be renting out a room. You'd probably knock down about one third of your mortgage payment, if not more, by renting out a room until your income went up, you know, as your job changed, those sorts of things, or interest comes down and you refinance.
And especially with the older homes, they do tend to have basements, maybe not necessarily finished, and they have separate entrances, which is a nice thing too.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And it doesn't take that much to finish a basement, realistically.
No. So, you know, like I tell my team, the question isn't about whining about what I can't do. The question is how. And if you really want to buy a house, houses are not going to get less expensive.
No.
Okay. I think we've established over the last 3 years, they're not going to crash. Elizabeth has shared with us that interest rates aren't going to fall over a cliff. We may see a half a point, you know?
Yeah.
And so now it's like, let's just, you've waited 3 years. You sat on the sidelines while prices have gone up less than they did in 2020, 2021, but they've gone up anyway. And so, you know, let's look at how. And there's, you know, you get with a creative mind like Elizabeth and me, there's so many things that you could be doing to get yourself into your first house and have that hedge against inflation. So call us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing too, are neighborhoods as big a consideration right now, or are we kind of, is that kind of broadened out? Because obviously when we talk about what the numbers are throughout Salem and the rural areas, they do vary. So are people stuck on a neighborhood, or are they more willing to look in places that maybe they wouldn't have considered a couple of years ago?
That I think that really is from person to person.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's neighborhoods that I would consider, there are neighborhoods I wouldn't for me personally. And there are other people that they're perfectly fine and they're happy there. And, you know, so we don't talk about specific neighborhoods. First of all, that would be a HUD violation.
So, oh, it would. Oh, oops.
Yeah, it's what's called redlining. Yeah.
So,
Yeah. So
really, you know, I was thinking about it from the charm and the feel of the neighborhood. That's how I was kind of coming at it. But that's interesting. I guess I hadn't thought about it that way.
Well, your charm is my annoyance.
Well, same to you.
No, there's something for everybody out there.
There is. There and is. And there's a lot of great areas in Salem. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. So. Me personally, I like a lot of land.
There you go.
We got outside.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not a lot of land in.
I like to limit my drive time, and that's a big thing for me. That's why West Salem, when I was looking, was off out of bounds because I'm going. I'm not going to go over that bridge every day.
Right. That's exactly my thought too.
Yeah. There's other people that just absolutely love it over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. It is. It is a personal preference.
Different strokes for different folks.
Absolutely, and that's the beauty of it all. Well, really, really good information. Again, Amy McLeod with the McLeod Group, Elizabeth Smith with the Smith Mortgage Group. Always really great information from both of you. So we're just about out of time. We want to thank you again. We meet with you guys. We have Real Estate Insights twice a month. So in 2 weeks, we'll be back here to chat about what's happening then. Ladies, thank you so much.
You're welcome. So much.
All right, everybody, that's it for us today. Join us tomorrow. We've got Salem Mayor Julie Hoy is on the show.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.